Item 55.
Amend transit lodgings tax to add definitions and clarify duties for operators for short-term rental locations.
So this is the second reading, but I understand we have a friendly amendment.
Mayor, let me offer a friendly amendment if I could. In reviewing 6.04.040C, it reads as follows. Operators, it reads in relevant part, operators, which include booking agents, must provide all physical addresses of transient lodging occupancy locations within Portland city limits and the related contact information, including but not limited to the name and mailing address of the general manager, agent, owner, or host for the location. I have a memo I'll just share with you.
Could you just give me the code citation again, please?
Yeah, it's 6.04.040C. I have a memo that has the language. I believe this is not a substantive change, but more in the nature of a drafting issue. The including but not limited to language implies that the scope of the inquiry could go well beyond the information that is currently sought in the ordinance. And I think to address concerns have been raised about a too open-ended process, it would be wise to delete the but not limited to, which I think is just a is standard language we use, but is not, but I think has been interpreted as opening the door to a broader set of requests for information. This has been discussed, Mayor, with your staff and with Thomas Lanham, and it's a friendly amendment that they accept.
I have no objection to that as long as we understand that related contact information would be assumed to include telephone numbers.
Yeah,
since that is related contact information.
The intent here is not to have but not limited to be construed as authorizing request for information that goes well beyond what is identified in the ordinance. That was not the intent, and this is a case where using standard legal language might give someone heartburn in thinking that it's an invitation to go into a broader set of requests for information. If at some point the Revenue Bureau thinks they need additional authority, they can come get it, but they're comfortable with this friendly amendment.
Okay. Unless there's any objection by other members of the council, I'll consider that a friendly amendment and a technical change. Sorry.
Well, before we vote, I have a question about this very same section.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about any location and related contact information provided under this subsection is considered confidential and is not subject to public disclosure due to personal privacy concerns. So I guess, what is the legal basis for that? What's our ground to stand on when somebody wants that information?
Under state public records laws, we have to oblige ourselves in good faith to accept information as confidential in order to assert the personal privacy exemption. And so that would be our way of asserting that we are, when we take that information, we're obliging ourselves in good faith not to disclose it.
So does that mean if somebody makes a public records request for business licensees who provide dwelling services or whatever category they might fall into, is that exempt from public records disclosure?
It would probably depend. I mean,
Thomas is here.
Probably more familiar with that particular type of record request.
I'm Thomas Lanham with the Revenue Division. The bare fact of a business license is not subject to public record. It is subject to a public records request, and in fact, we post that information on our website. It's the financial information that's not subject.
So the fact that somebody has a business license, that's disclosed.
Right.
But then what they pay in taxes is not.
Right.
So we have the ability, it sounds like, to exclude disclosure of the names and addresses of people providing short-term lodging services under this ordinance. Is that?
Well, that was our intent. To the extent that they're fully compliant with every aspect of our law, including Title 33, it'll be a public record. For example, if I'm able to locate a host property, go to the BDS website, the Portland Maps website, you can actually click, get the BDS permit number, and that will reveal all of the contact information of the owner or the responsible person, the agent of that property. So to the extent that an operator is fully compliant with our law, they're already going to be out there in the public as having pulled that permit from BDS. The intent of this language was simply to state that up until the point that we have to disclose the information. We don't necessarily have any particular need to disclose that information.
And Thomas, that would be no different than any claim of confidentiality that we would apply. Ultimately, if a court issues a duly authorized subpoena, if a court or district attorney rules that the public interest outweighs the privacy concerns, we are always subject to some other authority directing us to produce information. I mean, we should be clear about that, regardless of what we build into our ordinances.
That's true.
So, I mean, are we creating a false expectation among people who will get permits under this program that there is some level of confidentiality when, in fact, it sounds like there's various ways to actually get that information?
Not as to those that pull permits. I think it's fairly widely known that when you receive a permit that you are, at that point, that's a public record. What we were trying to do in the discovery phase of bringing people into compliance was not to create a long laundry list of 1,000 or 1,500 operator locations who may or may not truly be in or out of compliance with the law, such that the newspaper or other other requester could get that list and publish this as, you know, what might be referred to, say, as a wall of shame. Why aren't you in compliance? We have no reason to do that or allow that to happen. So this is an effort to bar that from happening. Ultimately, as Commissioner Fish said, if it were challenged under Sunshine Law, you know, we would see where that would go. But it's the one first step that the local government is making an assurance that we would try to hold that information as confidential.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for staff before we vote? Then roll call, please.
Public testimony.
I just to clarify, the amendment that we're voting on is the entirety of this
right.
memo.
That includes three words.
It's the friendly amendment that just strikes the but not limited to.
I don't think we have to take public okay. testimony.
We don't need an emergency clause because it's a friendly amendment.
You may want to ask if there are people okay. who want
so
to. So
anyone
that
wants
that.
To speak on that amendment? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll proceed. Thank you. On that amendment. On only that amendment.
Well, that amendment relates to broad policy.
No. We've had an extensive public hearing on the broad policy questions. This is a technical amendment, and we're not going to have Groundhog Day. So if you want to speak on that amendment only, you're welcome to come up. Okay. Come on up. Now, we had hours of testimony on the policy questions here. So.
Marianne Schwab, concerned with a policy question. It's not clear to me when you're voting on this amendment. When I buy my car, my license is registered with the state. All of my information is registered with the state. In fact, I understand as of when we had the three-year income tax to rescue the Portland Public School District, all six of our districts, you have that information available to you, all the income. So I am really concerned that if I'm in business, and this is the technical piece, Sunnyside has 68 Airbnbs. We're talking 1 to 2 bedroom short-term rental. We're not even talking about the apartment yet that hasn't been approved. Of the 68, they've had 6 months to apply for a permit. Only two have that permit. I think you are making a grave mistake by creating this loophole. If they are renting their rooms, there is no platform. You're talking platform, platform, platform. Yet none of these online businesses have to report to the IRS that these homemakers are making income, these homeowners.
I think that's the point of
that's
this
That's the
amendment.
Point that I want to make right. sure that somehow the IRS is aware of this business income or non-business income because I pay my taxes, and I know you all do too. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay. Further questions or testimony on the amendment, then roll call on the amendment.
Fritz?
I'm sorry, on the ordinance as amended, sorry.
We're not voting on
the ordinance as amended. Sorry.
We didn't add the emergency clause.
We didn't add an emergency clause, so we can't vote on
second
the
reading.
You have to
amendment.
Take it to a further reading if you amend the ordinance today.
So a friendly amendment triggers a second reading?
Any amendment to an ordinance requires that 5 days
okay.
pass between
All right.
the amendment
Mayor,
and
I move the addition of an emergency clause.
Okay, is there a second to that?
Is this an emergency for the amendment or an emergency for
No,
it
would be for
ordinance.
The ordinance.
I'm not going to support the ordinance.
Thomas, a suggestion?
Yes. If if because of the amendment it needs to return for a second reading anyway, I would suggest the removal of the emergency ordinance.
No, it is it is not yet an emergency ordinance.
Second reading.
It's a second reading. So
can we put this over? Does it matter if we put the
We can set it over for a week for a second reading. So if that's
I would suggest that.
What's that?
Put it over for a second reading would be my suggestion.
Okay. Then, and if there's no objection, we'll do that. We'll set it over for second reading next week.
Since Thomas is here, though, and others who might be able to answer my question, I'll just put it into the record. I was listening to KGUN this morning, as I do on the way to work, and they were talking about Uber and noting that Uber drivers are not covered by their regular auto insurance, so that a passenger who was injured in an Uber crash might not have any kind of liability coverage for their injuries. And I'm wondering, would a regular homeowner's insurance cover any liability from an accident that might happen to a guest?
Excellent question. I won't pretend to know the answer. I would defer to the city attorney.
They might not know either, so I'd be very interested from for those in the audience who from the industry. I know that some platforms do cover their hosts for things like damage by the guest to the home. Just wondering, do you have an answer to me? Answer for me?
I don't know the answer. We could take
we'll
a look at
it. I thought that had been answered in previous testimony on this. Answer that yes, homeowners does cover that, but
I think the answer is that it can. So let's get clarification.
Okay. The other clarification I'd like before the vote next week, Mr. Lanham, is you've included now short-term rentals in the definition of hotel. And I'm wondering what consideration of any unintended consequences to the definition of hotel might result. For instance, are downtown hotels that pay into various business improvement districts would, by defining short-term rentals as hotels, would this then open up other obligations to those hosts, which are very not really hotelish? So that would be something I'd like, maybe not now, but before next week.
We may need to return to the question of taking action, but okay. So all right, we're gonna set it over for till next week then.
So may I ask? Just I may have missed because I've had people talking at me while doing this. Have we voted the amendment in yet?
Let's take a roll call on the amendments, and then the modified ordinance will move over to next week.
Council, the mayor accepted it as a friendly amendment. Why do we have to vote on it?
Right, I did rule it.
It was a Scrivener's change. We just deleted the including but not limited to.
Would it be cleaner to?
To me, it seems cleaner. I'm not sure.
Vote the amendment.
It seems like it may have actually been a substantive change given the ACLU's memo. I would vote
on
it.
Mayor, move the amendment. We'll take it as a substantive amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call on that.
Fritz, so I'm prepared to support the amendment because it makes the information requested more restrictive. I still believe that the information that's in the rest of the ordinance is problematic, but I do support the amendment. Aye.
Fish.
I do want to thank the ACLU for bringing to our attention the concern that the including but not limited to language might have been broader than we intended. This seems like a reasonable fix. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
I want to thank the Revenue Bureau while I have you here, Thomas, for the work that you've done on this. I think it's important to remember this is the ordinance that modifies our revenue code, not the substantive ordinance that we've already addressed, which says that under our zoning code, this use is legal. So this is the question of how the Revenue Bureau will proceed to collect revenue. And, of course, unlike code enforcement, revenue compliance is required, not complaint-driven. So Thomas and his staff have broad authority to make sure that people are paying their taxes. And that's as it should be. I also have a lot of confidence in you and your staff to use that authority appropriately and in a measured way, because the goal, again, is to have people be able to operate legally and pay their taxes. And that's what this ordinance is about. So thank you. Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, this will return for second reading next week then.